T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hi, hello, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me today on On Target. I am your host, Penny Wolfgang, and we're here every week, and we try to talk about subjects that we think are interesting and important and educational for all of us who live here in the Western New York community, and we try to speak to people who are making a difference, who are important in your lives, no matter where you live or where you're listening in the Western New York area. And actually, we are really privileged today to have in the studio with us at Entercom a very well-known, important, and instrumental, is that a good word? I don't know, assembly member from the New York State Assembly, Crystal Peoples, who is practically, I'm sure, a household name to all of us who live in the Western New York, because she's been so involved in government here and civic affairs for practically our lifetime. No, almost. She's
Some of our lifetimes.
And we're just delighted that the assembly member could come and talk to us, because the session, as you probably know, just wrapped up, and everything that happens in Albany and in the legislature so affects us in our everyday lives that I thought it was really important for us to have an opportunity to find out, like, what's happening, what's cooking, what's in the future, what's in the past, what we can look forward to. So thank you so much for coming. I know how busy you are, and we really appreciate it, assembly member.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. It's my honor to be here.
It's not really,
Your Honor.
But I know everyone's like, okay, I'm honored. I wanted to start out by introducing you to our listeners as far as your background and history, because maybe they're not as familiar as I am and as people in the kind of government affairs are with your background.
Okay, well, as you mentioned, I have been a public elected official for a number of years. I served for 9 years in the Erie County Legislature, representing the 7th District. During that time, I want to say 5 of those years, I was the majority leader, prior to going on to the state legislature, which I have been for 16 years. So that is a lifetime for a lot of citizens. In fact, there's some people who are now eligible to vote who weren't eligible to vote when I was first elected. And I hope they're encouraged to do just that, whether they choose me or not. Just be civic about it and go out and vote.
Can you explain the districts when we say somebody is from this district or that district? I think it's a mystery to a lot of people.
Well, the 141st district is essentially half of Buffalo. It starts at the University of Buffalo, their south campus, and it goes all the way to the Perry Projects. It crosses over on the west side of Main Street at least 8 or 9 different times, twice downtown and the rest of it around the Parkside area, some of it around the Vernon Triangle area. So it's a huge district. It's very diverse, both geographically, neighborhoods, ethnicities, income-wise. It's just very diverse. There are some other members of the state legislature who represent other parts of Buffalo, but I am the only member of the state legislature who has all my district is included in the city of Buffalo.
And, you know, we didn't go back far enough in our lives, but I wanted to let our listeners know that you were like, I think, grew up here and have a background
Born
here.
Born and raised in Buffalo. Yeah. School 31, been in high school, Buffalo State College, graduate and undergraduate.
So you are obviously more than familiar with all the issues, the people, the diversity that you represent, because you just grew up here and know how everything, what's needed and what isn't needed.
Well, I think kind of like the way my parents raised my brothers and I, one is that you treat people how you want to be treated. And two is that you have to add value to the community that you live in. You can't just take from it. You have to add value to it. And so, you know, I remember just the whole conversation around our dinner table, where my mom was always Republican and my dad was always Democrat. It's like,
that's exciting.
It quite frankly, it was good for conversation. And at the end of the day, there were no arguments. It was maybe some disagreements, but there were no arguments, and the conversation kept going. The point I want to make here is that being born and raised in Buffalo with a family of working class people gave me a wealth of values and character that has moved right into my life now as a elected representative. Nothing about that rearing has changed except the age. But you only go stronger in your character and you go stronger in your integrity. And so when you get to, grammar school and you run into kids who are not raised the same way you are, you have to push them back because they were bullies then too, and still maintain that treating people like you want to be treated. When you run into high school and you have a guidance counselor who tells you you're not college material, you shouldn't be going to college, you should be doing such and such, you rely on the values that your parents taught you, which was not if you're going to college, it's what college are you going to. And so I think the character and morals that I was raised with in the great city of Buffalo, in the Broadway, Fillmore, Emsley Street area, have really boded well for me, and I'm really super proud of my upbringing.
And you should be. And it's boded well for the voters and for the people that you represent, that's for sure. I wanted to ask you what the differences are, the challenges, different from your role before you were an assembly person, because you were so involved in other aspects of government.
Well, I was a community organizer with Citizen Action of New York, so I helped people understand that if we have common issues, we can collectively work together to change them. But at the end of the day, most of the time that we needed the changes that we needed to make, we had to go to government to do. For instance, I organized parents whose children had been lead poisoned. And one of the things that they decided that they should know is, where did the children live who were having lead poisoning at the highest level? So we were able to lobby then Dale Volcker and my predecessor, Arthur O'Eve, to put in legislation, state legislation, that requires the state health department to set up a database and keep a record of where children live who have lead poisoning. That law is still in place. That was even before I was elected, but I helped parents organize that, and we had to go and speak to, as I said, Senator Volcker and Deputy Speaker Eve in order to make that happen. And so I think once you work around issues and you understand that at the end of the day, in order to really solve that issue or at least have some leeway into it, you need to have, government will have to do something. And by simply having the government to keep records of where children are lead poisoned, now there can be some targeted approach on how you begin to look at dealing with that as an issue.
Mm. So it's sort of like a different aspect. You're continuing the work that you were doing as an assemblyperson, only from a different perspective.
Pretty much. I mean, I actually live near ECMC Hospital. I wasn't elected then, but they wanted to put a medical waste incinerator at the hospital. Well, we organized the whole neighborhood to say, no, we don't want you burning medical waste on top of our houses. And so there's, things that, I think organizing is
a good background.
It goes across the board, whether you're elected or not. Mm-hmm. Even as an elected person, I still have to organize.
Yes.
I have to get people to agree with me. I mean, there are 150 members in our body, and you only win by the majority. You don't win just because it's your idea and you think it's the best one. You got to get other people to agree with you.
Now, I just wanted to get to that and talk about what it's like being an assembly member and what the issues are. But before I do, in case you just tuned in today, you are listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. And today we are talking to Assemblymember Crystal Peoples from the, tell me the district again.
The 141st
Assembly
District.
I'm going to write it down. The 141st Assembly District, which we hope you are listening because Ms. Peoples explained to you where that is. And wherever you are listening, whether it's your district or not, as we're going to find out, the work of the Assembly and the issues are faced that they face and that they deal with are going to affect us no matter where we live. It's funny saying that because a lot of times we're doing this program and on all the different intercom stations, and people are listening from Batavia, Jamestown, Niagara County, different things. But everything that has to do with New York State and the Assembly and the issues affect people no matter where they live in this area.
Exactly.
So now I want to ask you if you could, like, talk about the issues that that you dealt with in the last year in the assembly, and that you think people would be caring would affect them in their lives.
Well, you know, very often as a legislator, a large part of your job is, you know, investigating whether or not there should be legislative changes or legislative additions or amendments, et cetera. And some people, you know, do that well. They pass a ton of bills. I'm not one of those who likes to pass a ton of bills, because I think just passing laws is really not necessarily passing laws that impact people's lives in a positive way. That's what I'm more interested in. And so I am, you know, this year, this session, we were able to pass 11 bills that actually got passed in both the Assembly and the Senate. And as you know, it cannot become law without being passed in both of those separate houses and then being signed by the governor. I think one of the ones that I am most excited about is the law that authorizes cities who have populations between 250 and 300,000 to establish a senior citizen long-time real property tax exemption. So in other words, and specifically as this came to me because I see what is happening to people in the Fruit Belt. There are a lot of generations of people who have lived there for multiple generations. And, you know, some of them are seniors, and they have been paying property taxes. The value of their property is going up because of the investment in the medical quarter, which that's not a bad thing. That's a good problem to have. But at the same time, some of these seniors may not have the ability to pay increased property taxes based on the reassessment of their property. So we would like to see them be exempted from additional property taxes unless the property is sold. Now, you might note, kind of like UB 2020, what a great concept that was, that then President Sampson came up with. It was such a good idea that it could not get passed in the state assembly unless it was spread throughout all SUNY schools. So it ended up being SUNY 2020. And much like that, this legislation is pretty much the same thing. There are other people in other parts of the state who have maybe different circumstances, maybe not a medical quarter, but some circumstances where their seniors are being priced out of their homes because they can't pay the property taxes. And so I think you have to try to, you know, look at this, as you said earlier, that these laws are for the entire state. Although this one specifically does just say, you know, cities between certain sizes. So it does include New York City and does include some smaller cities that don't have these population numbers. The other thing that I think that I'm really kind of proud about is, you know, giving this Buffalo School District an opportunity not to have to pay the higher rates for charter schools and not being reimbursed until a year later. I would like to see them be reimbursed at the time that they pay those higher charters. That's like $9 million to the district. They really kind of needs the resources. Now, that one was also passed in the Senate by Senator Jacobs, and I kind of hope that that one happens as well, because it's going to be very, very helpful to the Buffalo School District. And the other one I think that I'm really very proud about is the opportunity for the city of Buffalo to have the ability to keep people who have been for years bought property in Buffalo, live in Phoenix or Brooklyn or L.A. or wherever they live. They don't take care of the property. They're not maintaining it. They collect the rents, but they're not honoring the codes that the city has. This legislation would allow the city to those code violation penalties to go into the tax records. So you can't ever get away from it. You can't get away from taxes. You can get away from code sometimes if you just keep ignoring it. But if you put them together, you cannot get away from taxes. And so I think that, you know, there are a number of things that have happened in past sessions that help deal with the problem of abandoned and zombie properties. But there was nothing yet that would really deal with the absentee landowner who was still collecting rents under LLC and not investing in property. And we know of at least one family that lost both the father and the daughter because they were living in a property where it wasn't up to fire codes. It didn't even have smoke detectors. The wiring was in bad condition. The guy had been notified many, many, many times, had been cited many, many, many times. Now there are two people dead. So I'm really happy about that. Another real big push for the assembly has been a recent criminal justice reform. And so there was a bill that was introduced by my colleague and the chair of the Black Puerto Rican Asian Legislative Caucus, Nick Perry, to about discovery, which I'm sure you're very familiar with as an attorney, which just would simply, you know, say that, you know, the defense should have the access to the same information that the prosecution does in the proceedings of a court. That one was a very difficult one to get through. There are a lot of people who don't think they think the prosecution should somehow have an advantage. I don't think so. I don't think our Constitution calls for that either. I think our Constitution calls for everybody to get a fair trial, and that they're innocent until they're proven guilty. And you can't do that if everybody doesn't have the same information.
Yeah.
So we've been working on criminal justice like that, issues like that, for a while in the state legislature. As you know, last year we passed raise the age so that we're not putting teenagers in the same jails with adults, not teenagers who were convicted of nonviolent crimes. Now, you commit a violent crime, you got to go where you need to go. But if you have just created a nonviolent crime, like using or selling marijuana, which a lot of people now use legally as a pharmaceutical, you should not be incarcerated with violent criminals, particularly adults. So it's been a work in progress.
We had Judge Hannah on Target not too long ago, and explaining how they're going to implement the raise the age and the new court for the quote unquote youth court, and
yes,
how it's going to work. So
yeah, Buffalo's been very good at creating some really great specific, yes, targeted courts to meet people's needs.
Yes. Now, how do these issues come to you that need, you know, work, or that need resolution, or that need new bills? Do people contact you, or are you aware of them through your constituents, kind of, or how do you find out?
Kind of always. The school district will alert you when there's a problem with their budget. Of course, they'll alert you right away.
For sure.
So, of course, the city has its priorities of things that it needs in order to make the quality of life in the city better. They'll notify you. And then, of course, there are lobbyists who represent different either associations or organizations, or doctors or pharmacists, or everybody has a lobbyist. And then, of course, there's always just, you know, your neighbors who may send you a note and say, hey, did you think about this? For instance, I have a daughter who's on dialysis, and somebody sent me a note about the fact that, I want to say the guy was in either Orchard Park or Elma, not in my district, but was on dialysis, and there was a power outage. Well, if there's a power outage, that means you're on a machine that stops. Now, whether that you're in the process of something being taken out of you or something being put in you, either way it goes, it's not good for it to stop. So we introduced legislation that finally this year got passed in the assembly that would require that people who have dialysis businesses have some sort of generator or some sort of energy source in place that will kick in if the power goes out, so that people who are in the process of being dialyzed are not, don't have to stop in the middle of it. That just came up because you realized that there was a problem there. Now, if you're at a hospital, that's not a problem because they're already required by health requirements to have backup generation. But the standalone dialysis agencies or organizations, they're not required to do that, and they should be.
And it's amazing how widespread the like criminal justice, dialysis, taxes, how widespread the legislation is in covering so many issues of people's everyday lives.
Everyday lives.
I just want to interrupt again in case you just tuned in. You're listening to On Target. They always tell me, keep identifying yourself and tell everybody who you listen, who you're talking to and who they're listening to. I always forget. So Jim is usually here in the studio nudging me, but I remembered myself. So you're listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. We're talking to Assemblymember Crystal Peoples, and she is just telling us about the issues facing the Assembly, the legislation, the end of the session that's been passed recently, and the future. We're just getting to the future, what is on the agenda for in the next session, because I'm sure that there's issues or legislation that you tried to pass or that was not successful or that you didn't get to this year that's like on the agenda and you're thinking of for the future.
Well, actually, there are a couple of them. One of them is the paint stewardship Act, which pretty much will put in place a recycling plan for unused architectural paint, which we do not have in the state of New York. A lot of controversy about it. Some people think that, you know, consumers should pay an extra fee for it to be recycled. Some people think the industry should pay. I personally think the industry should pay. They're the ones who gain the resources. But we're working on that. There are two frames of thought about that process, and I think that next session we should be able to get that one done. The other thing I think that's critically important, again, is the dialysis piece that got passed in the assembly only. We need that to happen in the Senate as well. And I'll mention the other thing that I think most people already know that I'm a big proponent of, and that is legalizing the adult use of marijuana. Not without restrictions, but legalizing, taxing, and regulating its use. I think the time has come. There are 9 other states already, and many of them are circle us, including one country, that being Canada, where it's a legal product. And I think that people who are of adult age and can prove that they are of adult age should not be, you know, harassed and or arrested for something that people who have lupus can go get marijuana for. I was a proponent of medical marijuana. I think that it should have been more widely available than it is. I think we're slow walking it into the place where it needs to be. But I think at some point, and I hope that it is next year, that we will be ready for the adult use of legalized marijuana.
Now, explain just a little bit. You mentioned this earlier about how your background in like negotiating or getting people together has helped. Explain what happens like when you say, I think we should pass this, or I'm in favor of such and such. You have to get not only your own people on board, but other people to recognize, other assembly people, and you mentioned the Senate.
Exactly. So, yeah, you do have to do a lot of negotiating. Now, there have been 1, 2, 3 hearings so far on the topic of adult use of marijuana. And there are huge cohorts of people out there who are major supporters. So it's not easy. It's not difficult to find people who support this as an issue. But it is a bit of a challenge to convince other members that it's a good idea. Now, members who represent upstate communities and farming communities, they like it because, you know, it's a new market for farmers, quite frankly. It's already a new market for farmers because of the medicinal marijuana. It's already a new market for farmers because of hemp. Hemp, as you know, is a legal product that can be used for everything, clothes, paper, rope, you name it. Hemp is used. And quite frankly, New York State is exporting a lot of hemp. So it's benefiting our economy. It's the same product. It just doesn't have THC in it. It just has CBD in it, which, you know, that's the whole education process that people need to go through. So when I think of some of my colleagues who support this, they see it as a benefit to their farming communities. And quite frankly, some farmers see it as a benefit to them as well. And I think there are some people who may not, like myself, who have no real desire to be smoking it or suggest that anyone else should smoke it. But quite frankly, what you do know is that people do smoke it. And if you look at the data, Western New York Law Center has done some work on this. Partnership for Public Good has done some work on this. These are all local Buffalo groups. Open Buffalo has done some work on this. You know, they know from the data that, you know, more people who don't live in inner cities tend to be Caucasian, smoke marijuana, more marijuana, but more black and brown people are incarcerated for it. And so for me, that whole social justice piece has to be switched around. That you can't keep doing that, because once we do that, we incarcerate someone and they're convicted and they spend time in jail, they get out, they can't get Pell Grants to go to college. Well, how many jobs can you get in America now, including Buffalo, where you don't have either some college education or some certified training? Not many. You can't get a job. You can't live in public housing. So you've really relegated a person to second-class citizenship just because you arrested them for something that you don't arrest their neighbors down the street for. That's just not right. We got to, you know, if we want America to be right, then it's got to treat everybody right. It can't treat some people some way and other people another way. So social justice is big for me. The other part of it is the economy of it. And I think there are a lot of my colleagues in the Senate, in the Republican Senate, who are going to support legalization because of the amount of money that can be made.
Well, whatever the reason, I mean,
because there is a lot to be made. I know that there are companies that are being very successful now in the medical industry.
Keep reading about it, so
and
keep
they're
going
to look forward to being as successful in adult use business as well.
Now, my friend Lisa Yeager, who is a staff member and devoted
my counsel
and your counsel and devoted to you, told me proudly that I should be sure to ask you about being or to mention the chair being the chairperson or the chairwoman, I'm not sure what they call it, of the Women's Legislative Caucus. What does that mean?
Well, that means that we have a caucus of women who come together on a regular basis. We focus on issues that are important to us as women, bipartisan and bicameral. So it's both Senate and the Assembly, Democrats and Republican. We work on issues that we think are important to us. This year, a lot of our focus was on child care issues because it doesn't matter where you come from. You know, child care isn't an important issue. And so we spent a lot of time working on that. We did have a retreat earlier in the year before session started. We went to Saratoga and had a really great retreat. There we focused on women in business. Because that's another one of my major issues that has been my issue since I was in the county government, which is minority and women-owned business. You know, government is not in the business of being a business, but in order for it to do business for people, it has to do it with somebody. And my point is that it should happen with women and or minorities who have the capacity to do the business. So that's what we focus on at that retreat. And we also focused on daycare issues. And the other issue that we added to our agenda this session, which I think we'll see more of next session, is how to care for adults who are still disabled. So, you know, we have a member who has a son who, you know, she still needs to care for in a way that he won't fit on a diaper table anymore. But she still has to care for him. So we're looking to add some real kind of value into looking into how do you provide for the resources and the support systems for families who may move around the Capitol or move around the thruway with their adult children who are yet disabled.
Well, it's all the issues that you deal with and that you deal with in the future are so important to all of us in Western New York. I'm really pleased that we could have an opportunity to discuss them today on Target and that you could join us. And we thank you very much, Assemblymember Crystal Peoples. Hey, thanks for listening, everybody, too. And we hope you've enjoyed our conversation. Please join us again next week, same time, same station. Have a good week, and bye, everybody.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.